recording episode 179 of the Cricket Her Weekly. And Sid, we have just watched the final of this year's Women's 100 competition, and it was a Southern Brave triumph by 34 runs, I think it was in the end, against the Northern Superchargers. Now, we were both talking before the final about who we thought was going to triumph, and we predicted Brave. So, Sid, why did you think Brave would win, and why do you think they did win?
Well, I suppose that, you know, there's a reason why they've topped the table. You know, again, they've topped the table in two of the three seasons. And they just seem to have, you know, a bit more depth to their team. And I think that we did kind of see that today because, you know, both teams lost early wickets. They lost two early wickets, very similar circumstance. But, you know, Brave still had Danny Wyatt there, who was able to kind of... she had to take on a little bit of a different role in terms of the fact that she had to kind of retrench her game just a little bit. She couldn't go out a million miles an hour suddenly because she needs to be a little bit careful, and she obviously knew that. But then, you know, after the sort of 50 ball mark, she really opened up, and, you know, she was on set for an even bigger score, and, you know, on one of the most unlucky dismissals that you're going to see, because, you know, not only did it hit her and ricochet off, but it kind of went pretty much straight to Kate Cross, who just was like, thanks very much, I'll take that as a wicket. I almost felt in some other circumstances that the captain might have recalled the appeal for that wicket, because it was almost felt a little bit unfair. It was so unlucky, but obviously, you know, this is a big game and they weren't going to do that, and that's fine, absolutely, you know, no opinion from me that that's what should have happened. But yeah, so, you know, and they powered through it, and then, you know, such a key player in this final for me was Rhianna Southby, and I've just written a piece which you can read on the site about her performance in this match and about how, you know, this has just been like a dream month for her, and it's capped that dream month. And bearing in mind that, you know, a month ago she was the player that got dropped for the entirety of the Charlotte Edwards Cup. She didn't play any games in the Charlotte Edwards Cup. She'd been dropped because her batting wasn't good enough, and she was kind of out of favour. And then suddenly, you know, she's back into the effectively the same team, you know, the Brave rather than the Vipers. She's back here, she's playing in these matches, and she's here at Lords, and she's lifted the trophy off taking, you know, three good stumpings and having another great game. And what a month she's had. You know, we talk about Anya Shrubsole's kind of, you know, dream send-off, and, you know, it definitely was, you know. She's won the game in, you know, her last ever professional cricket game. You know, she's walked off with, you know, literally the biggest, it must be the biggest trophy in the game. It's enormous. But, you know, what's Rhianna Southby, you know, what must it be like to be her after having the low that she had at the beginning of the summer of being dropped? And now, you know, everyone's talking about her as the, you know, the best keeper, you know, of the young keepers in England.
Great. Yeah, absolutely agree with everything you just said. I would add that for me, I think the key factor today, and, you know, there is a reason why we keep getting Southern Brave in the final, is the Charlotte Edwards effect. And it's also the fact that this is a team that she's gathered around her, who are very loyal to her and who play very well together. And as you said, it is effectively the same team as the Vipers. I actually asked, we had Lauren Bell in the press conference, and I actually asked her about this. And she said, yeah, it really helps because we play together all the time. She did also talk about there having been some different personalities around the group during the 100. It's not 100% the same people, but it feels very similar. It feels like a very similar ethos of Charlotte Edwards, you know, being very much in charge and very much inspiring loyalty. And she's just added the one remaining trophy to her cabinet that she did not yet have. So, you know, fantastic for her, and as you say, it was great for Anya Shrubsole. A little bit disappointing that she didn't get to bowl her final five balls.
We were hoping she'd bowl that final set, weren't we? Yeah. And you would take that last wicket. That would have been the absolute, yeah. That would have been the headline writer's dream.
Yeah, I mean, but Lauren Bell should really have just not removed those bails for that final run out. Of course, that's not how cricket works, and she would have looked a bit silly if they'd then gone and smashed like six sixes or whatever. But yeah, could have been quite funny. So maybe not like 100% the fairy tale ending for Shrubsole. She took one wicket, but it was, you know, probably like 99% of the fairy tale.
Yeah. I think she did that. She kept on the tradition, didn't she, of not lifting the trophy herself. She gave it to one of the other players. I think Waggy in the end lifted the trophy, I believe.
Okay.
So, you know, that's another thing that we've kept going with. So, right. Yeah. But I want to talk a bit more about what Brave have done there, because one thing that I thought was really interesting is that, you know, it's mostly their domestic players that have won this tournament through all of their hard work. and, you know, all of the improvements we've seen in the domestic game. And in fact, this hasn't been all about the overseas players, because in fact, if you look at the numbers, Brave have carried two of their overseas players. Chloe Tryon and Maitland Brown, you know, their between them, their contributions have been pretty negligible. You know, I don't want to knock particularly on Maitland Brown, because, you know, she's a player that's still, you know, coming, you know, she's still, her peak is still to come. But Chloe Tryon has been a little bit disappointing, I think. You know, she was kind of hired to play that sort of aggressive, power-hitting role, the role that we've seen Laura Harris play a couple of times for the Welsh Fire, and she just hasn't, Chloe Tryon hasn't fired. She's bowled a bit, she's you know, she's done a job, you know, and she's done things in the field, you know, and she's run around gamely, but she hasn't produced that. I think she's got two double figure scores and a highest of 20 something, so she hasn't really justified her price tag. Maitland Brown's also, you know, she hasn't had a lot of opportunities, but she hasn't scored a lot of runs. She hasn't bowled much, she's only bowled a couple of times, and she's supposed to be primarily a bowler, really, is she not? So, you know, and yet, even though they've been carrying those two players, Brave have powered through and won it.
Well, yeah, and I think partly those two players who you've just talked about haven't had an awful lot to do, because Smriti Mandana, their other overseas, Danny Wyatt and Maya Boucher have been so dominant with the bat. Also, some really important contributions with Freya Kemp, from Freya Kemp. But yeah, you're right. It's been a team who play well together in domestic cricket and aren't the kind of big name overseas superstars, largely speaking. So fantastic for them to have won it. Shall we reflect a little bit on what happened yesterday at the Oval, Sids, which was the eliminator was eliminated by the weather. Thank you for laughing at my terrible joke. We had 75 balls bowled of it. It'd already been reduced to 95 balls, but then it was totally washed out by a thunderstorm. They had to initially abandon play for safety reasons because there was lightning, and then there was more rain. But following that, there was then beautiful sunshine for multiple hours, and of course the entirety of the men's eliminator did get played with no reduction in available balls. And there were some very, very frustrated, unhappy Welsh Fire players and supporters, you'd have to think. And there's been a lot of talk about perhaps what we should do about this. Is it fair that is what transpired, when actually you perhaps could have had time to fit in two shorter games? Now, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, actually, on the podcast. And I thought we had reached a stage whereby they were prepared to shorten the men's game in order to get a bit more of the women's game played, because we did have an example where the men's game was delayed by, I think it was 15 minutes or half an hour, because the women's game overran. And we have been hearing, in fact it was said on the radio today, I believe, that the plan for today, had it rained, and there was the forecast of some rain, although it hasn't actually transpired, but had it rained, there was a plan to foreshorten the men's game in order to get in something that constituted a game in the women's game. So do you think that would have been the right way to handle it, Sid, to make that last minute change between yesterday and today?
Well, at the end of the day, you know, what happened yesterday is that, you know, there was enough time to play 275 balls of cricket. And, you know, the way that things transpired is that they played 75 balls of the women's game, which couldn't constitute a game, and 200 balls of the men's game. So there obviously was time to get both games played. I do understand the ECB's, you know, perspective overall, that, you know, you need some sort of certainty and surety, and the TV people, you know, TV is king, in particular, you know, Sky is king, and, you know, they've sold adverts around a particular schedule, so you can't just, like, completely upend things. But on the other hand, you know, well, it does seem like what we're hearing here today is that they have said, well, we can't completely upend things, but we could have completely upended things if we'd wanted to. So, you know, obviously they can make that flexibility happen if they really want to. And I think that's what, ideally, I think we'd like to see in future for this competition in particular, because, you know, this is a very special kind of doubleheader. It is a very much a doubleheader where both games are supposed to matter equally. So I think that there's no reason why you couldn't have gone, you know, at the point where the players were in a position to be able to potentially come back on, at which point the game had already been called off, but the women could have come back on, and you could have at that point said, oh, well, you know, we're going to take you know, 20 balls off the three remaining innings that there are, rather than just losing the entirety of the rest of the women's game and, you know, the men's game completing with all 100 balls.
I think, yeah, the issue is that the ECB are kind of promoting it as one match day. And that is, as you say, the kind of unique thing about it compared with other double headers. So they're promoting it and they're saying kind of philosophically it's one match day and both matches are equally important. And it's almost like it's the same, it's the same match. But actually, in practice, the frustration is coming from the fact that the two games are not being treated equally and that they are treating them as if they are totally separate games in the traditional sense of a doubleheader, right? And so you've got a mismatch between the kind of the theory or the philosophy surrounding the 100 and surrounding the match days and what's actually happening in practice. And that's why people are getting frustrated and upset, because what they're hearing does not match what's happening in practice. Yeah, I suppose the issue with making last minute changes is that you maybe haven't thought through all of the ramifications of those, right? And actually, you know, when you do make sudden last minute changes with no thought, then sometimes you don't kind of think through all of the scenarios. And a good example actually happened in the first year of the Women's 100, when they had that thing in the rain regulations that said that if no balls of the men's game gets played, even if the women's game has been played, then all ticket holders get a 100% refund. And there was an outcry about that, because people were going, hang on a minute, this is really not in keeping with what you're saying about your ethos of the competition, of both of them being equal. And they realised that and they changed the regs halfway through. But somebody had just clearly copied and pasted those rain regs from somewhere else and just going, yeah, we'll just use those for the 100. So if you do things without thought and without going, right, what are all the scenarios? How could it play out? This is how it played out on Saturday at the Oval in the Eliminator. But tomorrow at Lord's, it could play out totally differently. Next season, we could have 20 other different scenarios with rain. Then who knows? And so you do really have to, I think, make changes having thought through all of the implications.
Yeah, and I think something else that would be important going forward as well, which hasn't been the case here, is that, you know, they need to let everybody know what's going on. And that's something they didn't really do here. So, you know, what we've found out today seems to have mostly come because Alex Hartley got some inside information that she then kind of talked about on the radio, and then everyone else was like, oh, okay, now we know this, do we?
Yeah.
So there's not always the clarity from the ECB about exactly what would happen under these circumstances. And, you know, it's a little bit like the Charlotte Edwards Cup final, where no one was sure that there was a reserve day, and, you know, even as the rain was coming down during the Charlotte Edwards Cup final, we were all going, there's a reserve day, and some people were going, yeah, there's a reserve day, and other people were going, I don't think there is a reserve day.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, it's helpful if everybody actually knows what's going on.
The big problem with rain and legislating for rain is that you're having to make a guess based on the weather forecast, aren't you? So we could have looked at the weather forecast for yesterday afternoon and gone, oh, well, it says there's going to be storms and loads of rain, so let's reduce the women's game initially to 25 balls a side, and then that'll constitute a game, and they would have got that in easily, and then the rain would have come down, and, you know, whoever won would have felt, right, we're actually justified in getting through to the final. But if they'd done that and then there hadn't been any rain and the whole thing had just played out, then there would have been loads of spectators sitting around for 3 hours in the middle between the games going, hang on a minute, why aren't we watching any cricket at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it also bears stating, does it not, that at the end of the day, you know, okay, we accept and we can see that the Welsh Fire made a decent total, and, you know, it probably feels like they probably would have gone on to win that match because it was a decent total to have made in 75 balls. But at the end of the day, what happened was basically fair.
Because, you know, 4 days previously, Superchargers had beaten the Fire in the group stage game, and that was what ultimately decided.
Yeah, because ultimately, it turns out there is a reward for coming second.
Yeah.
The reward for coming second is that, I think something dead exciting must have just happened in the men's game behind us, because there's a huge cheer. No idea what that is. Anyway, so going back to the Welsh Fire, that yes, they would have won that game, but ultimately, if they hadn't lost the game earlier in the week, then it would have all been a different story.
And so, that's exactly what Danny Hazel said in the post-match press conference, because I asked her, I said, how much do you feel that what happened yesterday in the Eliminator actually made a difference coming into today's game? Because there was a lot of people saying that Superchargers didn't really deserve to be here. And she said, you know, it's Mother Nature. She said it in a Geordie accent, which I'm not going to attempt. But, you know, why I, mate? It's Mother Nature. That was terrible. And
Cricket Her would like to apologise to Danny Hazel and anybody else from Newcastle.
But basically, she said we deserved it because we won against Welsh Fire 4 days ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there are the rules. And, you know, Welsh Fire had every opportunity to have won that other game. They didn't win it. C'est la vie. I mean, Welsh Fire's prize, even if they had got through, would probably to have been beaten by Brave.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, away from the hundreds, metaphorically speaking, because we, literally speaking, we are not very far away from the hundred, as you've just heard. but metaphorically speaking, away from the hundred in terms of news, there's been some very big news coming out of South Africa this week. Now, the slightly less exciting bit of news is the announcement of equal match fees, which is the thing that's made the headline, equal match fees for the women in comparison to the men. Now, we've spoken at length before on the broadcast, Sid, about how that's basically just a headline-inducing piece of news that doesn't really mean very much in practice because most of the pay comes from the salary. So we won't reiterate that too much. But anyway, they're getting equal match fees. But the really exciting thing is that they're setting up a domestic professional structure. And it's the first sport in South Africa that's going to have a domestic professional structure. Sorry, first women's sport that's going to have this domestic professional structure. So really exciting, really important thing to happen across the board for women's sport in South Africa, first of all. So just a few details, there's going to be 6 professional teams with 11 contracts at each team. They're also going to have full-time coaching staffs, and Cricket South Africa is going to subsidise 4 backroom staff positions for each of the 6 sides, and they're going to actually require 2 of them to be female.
Yeah, so that is some really interesting stuff from South Africa. I think it's a really interesting approach that they've taken as well to how they're setting up these teams. So what we saw in this country is that the ECB decided to kind of abandon the counties because, you know, they didn't want to particularly favour one county over another. So they said, well, what we're going to do is amalgamate the counties and we're going to create these regions. And, you know, that's how we see things playing out. South Africa have taken completely the opposite approach. So what they're saying is that there's going to be, is it 5 or 6?
6.
6 of these kind of top teams, but they're just going to pick the 6 top teams from their current provincial system, and those teams will be the 6 teams in the first season, but there will also be a degree of promotion and relegation. So the implication there is that what's going to happen is that after, you know, the first season has played out, one of those teams, at least, will lose their status as one of the top teams, and a new team can therefore come in. And this is something that we discussed whether or not this could possibly happen in England. And we kind of, everyone concluded, well, we don't really want to do this because, you know, it means it's difficult to invest long term if you're not certain you're going to be receiving that income in the next year. Well, South Africa have taken the opposite approach. And, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out and how it plays out for those teams as they lose funding after that first year.
And the other thing that's really interesting about this is the thing that I just read out about the fact that they are actually mandating that some of these new professional staff at these women's, these professional women's domestic teams are going to have to be women. And that's obviously something that we haven't seen in England, and we're still seeing an absolute kind of absence of coaches from many of the regional teams who are women, and there is still an absence of this pathway. So obviously South Africa are very accustomed to the use of quotas because there are a lot of racial quotas for very obvious reasons. So it's very interesting to see that they've also decided, well, we're going to adopt some gender quotas. Now, there are lots of academic debates about the extent to which gender quotas actually work, But it's potentially a very interesting development in the sense of let's see if it works. Let's see whether South Africa can kind of promote better and more pathways for women coaches. And actually, there was a really irritating conversation on Sky, I will say, before the Eliminator yesterday, just when the rain was coming down and there was a delay initially. And it was Nasser Hussain and Nick Knight. And Nasser Hussain said one of the things we need to do to try and catch up with Australia is to have more women coaches, and that's really important. And Nick Knight basically said, oh, so are you saying that women coaches should be promoted above their station? And Nasser Hussain said basically, no, I'm not saying that, of course I'm not saying that. But it was an incredibly infuriating conversation, because the amount of male coaches who get jobs, who have no experience, who just get the gig because their old mate rings them up and says, oh, why don't you come along and help me out here, do a bit of coaching with this women's team. And so then they get the experience, they get the job, and they become a coach. And there are loads of women who don't get those opportunities, who have all of the coaching qualifications but none of the connections. And it really still feels like in this country very much a jobs for the boys ethos prevails. And that conversation on Sky will have done absolutely nothing to dispute that, because anyone who watched it will have been like, oh yeah, Nick Knight's obviously saying that, you know, there are women coaches who don't deserve their jobs. And it's like, mate, it's actually the other way around. There are a load of bloke coaches out there who don't deserve their jobs. Anyway, gone off the point slightly since.
But, well, and also, look at the two coaches here today.
Absolutely. Just filed a piece for The Guardian that reflects on those two, you know, that amazing, exciting, ongoing rivalry that we've got between those two coaches. Did actually ask Danny Hazel about that as well in the post-match press conference. I won't attempt to do the Geordie accent for a second time. But, you know, she said, yeah.
You compared them in your Guardian piece to Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger and their great rivalry in men's football. But I want to know which one's which, Raph. Which one's, you know, is Charlotte Edwards Sir Alex Ferguson, or is she Arsene Wenger? You know, which one's the French artiste and which one's the dour Scot?
Perhaps we should let our viewers comment on what they think about that. Sid, we're just reflecting on some of the coverage that we've seen of the Women's 100. And I know that you had a few thoughts on that you wanted to share to wrap up this episode of the Cricket Her Weekly.
Yeah, I thought there was something really interesting about the way that we saw the Sky and the BBC both making their presentations, especially during the Eliminator. I was observing this. And one thing that immediately strikes you is that Sky will do a presentation where they do their thing on the side of the field for the game, and there'll be the two people that are, you know, the talking heads, doing the Sid and Raph role, if you like. And, you know, then there'll be like two, maybe three people, you know, there'll be a guy with a camera and there'll be maybe one, you know, producer or, you know, someone that's doing some lighting perhaps as well, but usually not even that. So Sky, you know, have really got this down to a fine art of not needing a lot of other people. Whereas the BBC seem to need a team of 15 people in order to support three people on air. One of whom's entire job appeared to be to touch up Ishiguro's makeup between takes.
She was also doing hairspray.
Okay, so, I mean, you know, the hairspray is obviously, you know, a big thing. And okay, you know, look, I don't want this to get personal with regard to Isha, because, you know, she's fantastic and she's a great presenter. We were just talking to Susie Bates, who's been working with her over the last couple of days, and she was saying, you know, how great Isha is and how much easier it makes her job as the sort of the talking head when someone as good as Isha is, you know, the person next to her. So, you know, definitely not personal. But this whole thing does kind of reinforce the kind of vibe that if you're a woman, in order to be on television, you have to be conventionally attractive and heterosexual presenting and, you know, wear lots of makeup and have your hair done nicely and have the kind of hair that, you know, can be done nicely. And it all feels actually that it kind of reinforces a pile of sexism within the kind of the broadcast industry. About the fact that, you know, women, the women that get, you know, that make progress within that industry, it's so much harder to make that progress if you are not heterosexual presenting, if you are not conventionally attractive. And I think that, you know, as a kind of honorary feminist, as I kind of like to see myself, am I allowed to say that I'm an honorary feminist?
I think you are allowed to say you're a feminist. There's no honorary about it, Sid. None of us are paid to be feminists.
Okay, so I just feel that makes me uncomfortable, and, you know, I don't need to see Isha in that makeup, you know, she can do a great job if she had no makeup on, believe me, because we have actually seen her do it, because we've seen her work on Sky, where there's an awful lot less makeup and things, you know, because that's not the way that Sky works. So we know that it can be done without the makeup and without the hairspray. Just let the people, let the women do it exactly like you let the men do it, because there's no one there touching Kevin Peterson's makeup between every take.
There should be, he needs it. Anyway, it's all right, I'm already off his Christmas card list. For saying that anything he had to say about Basball was about 15 years out of date, as his opinions mostly are. Right. let's wrap up there. Thanks very much, everybody, for watching and listening as ever. We've loved covering the 100 again. And we're back to internationals pretty soon. So see you in a week's time for more chat about England v Sri Lanka. Bye for now.
Bye.